presenting Hop Harrigan, America's ace of the airwaves. Hop! Presenting Hop Harrigan, America's ace of the airwaves.
CX-4 calling control tower. CX-4 calling control tower. Standing by.
Control tower back to CX-4. Wind southeast. Ceiling 1200. All clear.
Okay. This is Hop Harrigan. Coming in, yes, it's America's ace of the airwaves. Coming in for another transcribed episode in the adventures of Hop Harrigan.
Fellas and girls, I've spoken to you many times about the Air Force and its new planes and plans. You know, under the new defense setup, the Air Force is a separate branch of our armed forces. But the Navy has its own air wing, just as it's had for almost the past 40 years. And the Navy's been going strong in the matter of developing new and better planes. For instance, Navy flyers hold two of the three generally recognized air records. First, the Truculent Turtle established the long-distance record in a flight from Perth, Australia to Columbus, Ohio, a distance of 11,000 miles. The Turtle is a Lockheed P-2V, a long-distance patrol bomber. The other record is held by the D-588 Skystreak. It holds the world speed mark of 650 miles an hour. Twice within 1 week, the Skystreak flashed the new world records. First with Commander Turner Caldwell at controls, and then with Marine Major Marion Carl. When Major Carl set the world speed record, the temperature inside the cockpit rose to 120 degrees, even with his special refrigeration unit working. Imagine how warm you must have been. Another thing you may not know about Navy planes is the difference between them and land-based planes. Since most of the Navy planes have to work off carriers, they must be able to fly at lower speeds in order to land on short carrier decks. Another feature that's important is the plane's ability to pick up speed in a hurry in case it gets a wave off at the last minute. I'll be back later with more interesting information about Navy aviation, so don't forget to listen. And now for our story. Finding the hidden ranch house where Dixie Davenport was being held prisoner by Tex Regan and Joe Bell, Hop ordered Tank to fly back to the motion picture location camp to alert the state police, and then he bailed out of the Beechcraft. When he discovered that Regan was leaving the ranch to collect the ransom money for the horse Sequoia, and that Joe was to meet him that night, after eliminating Dixie and the horse in a deliberate plane crash, the young pilot took a dangerous chance. He allowed himself to be captured. Then he began a war of nerves, taunting and baiting Joe. Finally, in anger, Joe tied them both up and rushed out of the ranch house.
Hop, what's he going to do?
Well, I think he'll check the plane first, see if the pins on the tail control assembly are loose the way I said.
Well, aren't they?
Of course, I listened to myself. And I did something else, too. If Joe finds it, he'll really blow his top. All we have to do is wait for him to come back. And the longer he takes, the better. Because right now, Tank should be on his way here with the police.
But Hop's confidence is completely unfounded. So at the movie location camp, the lumbering mechanic is the picture of despair as he faces Ivan Ivanov, the director.
I lost the map. I can't find it no place.
What map? What do you talk about, Mr. Pinker?
The map I marked the hideout on. I won't be able to find Hop and Dixie without it.
Mr. Pinker, do you mean to stand there with your bare face hanging out and tell me, after all my magnificent preparations, we cannot find Dixie, darling?
Listen, I told you before, we need the police on this deal, and you're following up the works with reporters and cameramen and a lot of junk.
Junk? Donkey Cozy!
Mr. Ivanov, please, sir, your blood pressure.
Mr. Peabody, go away. Let my blood press in peace.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Now, Mr. Pinker, once and for everything, Ivanov is the director. We do things my way.
Doggone it, this ain't a movie.
No, you are correct. It is life. And I, Ivanov, will record it for prosperity.
But they can't fight guns with cameras. Regan and Joe Bell are on to the teeth.
Ah, there will be four of us in the plane. You, myself, Mr. Peabody, Mr. Mark Twain, our cameraman.
Oh, for Pete's sake.
Mr. Ivanov, if I may point out...
What do you say?
I doubt if we can do anything about rescuing Miss Davenport and Mr. Harrigan if Mr. Tinker doesn't find that map.
So that is what I am waiting for? Come, go look, Mr. Tinker, find it.
How many times do I got to tell you I lost?
So you remember where the ranch house is?
There's 50 valleys around there, and in the dark, they all look alike.
Well, we look through all 50.
We'll have to wait till morning.
But we cannot wait. The reporters will be here in the morning. We must be on our way back then.
Hey, wait a minute. Hop said to do something else in the morning.
So?
The bank. Jumping Jenny's what a dope I am.
That point I do not argue.
Hey, listen, Mr. Varnoff, did you check with the bank president to find out if Regan took the dough already?
Mr. Peabody checks, not Ivanov.
The bank president said the money is still there.
Oh, well, and we still got a good chance.
Please, so explain yourself.
Well, Regan or Joe Bell, maybe both, will show up at the bank first thing in the morning, and we'll be there to meet him. We'll grab him and make him tell us where Hop and Dixie are.
Exactly what I am going to suggest. I am glad you agree with me, Mr. Peter.
Sure, sure, I agree.
We will leave immediately. Mr. Peabody, where is Mr. McSwain? What? He's holding up the walking.
He said he'd be right there. Oh, here he comes, sir.
About time. So, Mr. Tinker, you will get ready to drive in the airplane?
Okay, pile in.
All right, Mr. McSwain, we're ready to leave.
I'm coming.
Mr. Tinker, one more, please.
Yeah, what now?
You are absolutely positive you know how to drive in the airplane?
How many times do I have to tell you?
You can tell me a million times, Mr. Tinker, but remember, we only crash once.
We ain't gonna crash.
All right. So, are we ready now? Mr. Peabody, Mr. McSwain?
Yes, sir.
Okay, Mr. Ivanov.
Mr. Tinker, we await your pleasure.
Shaking his head in utter resignation, the tank starts the engine of the Beechcraft and prepares for takeoff. Things are not working out as Hop wanted, and Tank foresees trouble. Meanwhile, unaware of what is going on at the location camp, Hop is trying very hard to cheer Dixie.
Dixie, don't worry. Tank must be at the camp by now, and he'll have the police here in jig time.
I hope so. Steve's throat's hurt.
Well, try backing up against me. Maybe I can loosen him. Joe didn't do a very good job.
No, I can stand it. If he comes back and sees we try to escape, he might lose his head completely.
He's wild now.
Hop, what else did you do to the plane?
Not to the plane, to his parachute.
His parachute?
I cut the riser cords halfway through.
But why?
Well, with the line I've been feeding him about Regan double-crossing him, if he sees the chute is damaged, well, that should just about clinch it, don't you think?
Well, I...
Dixie, the chute's the only way he has of escape. When he sees the risers cut, he'll be sure Tex is trying to get him out of the way.
But suppose he doesn't check the chute?
Yeah, that's the chance we take.
Maybe you should have mentioned it.
Oh, no. Well, then he'd think I did it to throw suspicion on Regan.
Hop.
Yeah?
Do you really think Regan will double-cross Joe?
I haven't the faintest idea. But he certainly has a perfect opportunity.
True.
Hold it. I think he...
Yes. Joe's coming back. What do we do?
Relax and play it straight. Let him do all the talking.
Here he comes.
Easy now. Well, back so soon?
Harrigan, were you inside that transport?
Inside? What would I be doing inside?
Cut the stalls. Answer.
Oh, Joe, be reasonable. Why should I go in? I thought the pins were loose. That was enough for me.
Why? What's the matter, Joe?
Nothing. Where's that bank, Miss Davenport?
Bank?
You heard me. Where'd you leave the 50 grand?
Oh, it's in Barstow, Joe. You know that.
Where in Barstow? Where?
Near the Desert Road. You can't miss it.
What time is it open?
9 o'clock, I suppose.
Well, why all the questions, Joe? You should know the answers.
Just checking, Harrigan. 9 o'clock, huh? It's almost midnight now. That ought to give me plenty of time. Let me see these ropes.
Joe, please, you're hurting me.
That's too bad. Okay, now you.
Oh.
You two will be safe enough.
Hey. Hey, where are you going, Joe?
I'm fixing up the plane to fly in the park till right now.
Huh?
And me and Tech will have a long talk. And, pal, if you've been picking me a curve, I'll be back in plenty of time for that trip in the morning.
Slamming the door violently behind him, Joe Bell leaves Hop and Dixie alone again. The young pilot's plan seems to be working well. Or is it?
Gang, you won't want to miss the action-packed climax of today's episode, so stand by.
Now, let's get back down through years and trace the growth of the Navy's air arm from the very beginning up to now. It all started 39 years ago in 1908. In the fall of that year, Orville Wright was giving an aerial demonstration, and the Navy assigned two officers to it to see whether they could make use of the newfangled invention. In 1910, the first takeoff from a Navy ship was made when a Curtiss pilot, Eugene Ely, made a flight from a platform constructed on the bow of the USS Birmingham. A few months later, the same flyer landed a plane on the battleship Pennsylvania. And a short while after that, the Navy contracted for their first three planes. The Wright brothers were to build one and Curtis two others. Each company was to train a pilot for each ship. From then up to the First World War, the Navy bought more planes, trained more flyers, and generally began to take more recognition of air power. Navy and Marine planes took part in bombing raids and other special operations. By the end of the First World War, the Navy had over 2,000 planes of all types in service. The first carrier put into service was a converted carrier renamed the USS Langley. It was commissioned in 1922, and just 3 years later, two new carriers were added to the fleet, the Lexington and the Saratoga. The service of naval aviation during World War II is far famed. From the first great victory of carrier-based planes at the Battle of the Coral Sea to the very end of the war when Navy planes were blasting the homeland jets, it's a great record. Now, with the possibility that new speedy jets will be able to operate off carriers and rocket-powered planes in the works, naval aviation is looking ahead to the most important years of its career. And for the future, the Navy, as well as the regular Air Force and commercial airlines, need men and women to keep the planes flying. So always remember, America needs flyers! And now back to our story. It is shortly after 1 a.m, and a heavy cloud layer obscures the moon. The night is black as pitch. Tank Tinker, flying Ivanov, Mr. Peabody, and McSwain, the cameraman, the boss, though, seems to be having a little difficulty.
See any lights out that way, Mr. Ivanov?
Light? I see nothing. Nothing but black and blue.
How about you, Mr. Peabody? You see any lights?
No, I'm afraid not, Mr. Tinker.
Okay.
But why you want lights, Mr. Tinker?
Just checking, that's all. Nothing important. Don't worry about a thing. We got smooth sailing. Easy trip.
Mr. Tinker, you sound like you whistle in the dark.
I ain't whistling.
A figure of talk. What I mean, I think we are in some kind of trouble, yes?
Oh, no, no. What gave you that idea?
You, Mr. Tinker. So, what is the matter?
Nothing. Now relax. Wait, I'm busy.
Mr. Tinker, you said you knew how to drive an airplane.
Oh, we're flying, ain't we?
But for how long? Mr. Tinker, I do not like it.
Look, just leave me alone. I'll figure it out.
Figure it out? So, something is wrong, Miss Sweden. I knew
it. It ain't that bad. I'm just a little off course, that's all. Now, will you please relax and leave me alone?
Flaring up at the director, Tank leaves him momentarily speechless and quickly turns back to the controls. But deep within him, he knows it will take much more than a couple of minutes to find his way back on course. He's lost. Badly lost. Back at the ranch house, Hop and Dixie Davenport have been working furiously on the ropes binding them. But finally, Hop slumps back, completely worn out.
I give up. I can't budge them.
But you said Joe didn't do a very good job.
He did, just before he left. I just can't reach the nuts.
The ropes around my wrists are so tight, I can't even move my fingers.
We'll have to figure out some way, that's all there's to it.
Hop, listen.
Great Scott, what in the world is that?
Okay, a big one. Maybe a lion?
A lion?
He must be just outside that window.
Well, pray he stays there. We're in no shape for that kind of company.
Hop, look.
What? Good Lord.
He's jumped up on the window sill, and the window's open.
Hop and Dixie stare, wide-eyed with sudden terror, as they see the sleek, tawny form of a giant mountain lion crouching in the sill of the window. You won't want to miss our next episode, so be sure to listen. Tune in and fly with Pop Harrigan, America's Ace of the Airwaves. Come on, Hop. We'll be seeing you same time, same mutual station. Hop Harrigan is a transcribed, copyrighted feature appearing in All American Comics magazine and is brought to you Monday through Friday, same time, same neutral station.